Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. If you listened to our program yesterday, you know that we were broadcasting from Orleans on Cape Cod. We were talking about the Cape's changing demographics, its economy, the fishing industry, and the ocean.
Over the past couple of days, we also took time to travel around the Cape to report on some other issues, including the fate of one of Cape Cod's most precious resources, its beaches.
One of the perennial concerns along the wide, sandy beaches of Cape Cod is the steady erosion of this beautiful landscape. It's a lovely, placid summer afternoon right now on this piece of the Cape Cod National Seashore along the Wellfleet-Truro line. But fierce winter storms and nasty nor'easters regularly pound these beaches and sandy dunes, causing them to shift, even disappear. That's a concern to anyone who owns property around here. And it's something that Robert Oldale has spent a lot of time thinking about. Oldale lives in Falmouth on the Cape. He's a geologist emeritus with the U.S. Geological Survey. We spoke to him recently about beach erosion on the Cape and about what can and can't be done about it.
The basic problem is that it's, for the most part, made of sand, and dry sand has very little resistance to wave attack. So the waves come along and hit the base of the cliff, and it will just simply erode away. And that's essentially the process that is causing the shoreline on the Cape to retreat.
And how quickly is the Cape retreating?
The rate of retreat of the Cape shoreline that borders the Atlantic is on the order of 3 feet per year. Now, that's an average. You can get an extreme amount of erosion on the order of tens of feet during one storm. You have to take that 3 feet per year as something that is just an estimate.
It still sounds like a lot. I mean, you know, I've been alive for a little more than half a century, and I sort of feel like the Cape is something sort of permanent. It's always been there. It will always be there. But when I talk to people with your kind of knowledge, I come to appreciate that that's not necessarily so.
One of the reasons you get that impression is basically you come to visit the Cape in the summertime. So you're here for 2 weeks, you go to the beach every day, and every day the beach looks exactly the same. That's the summer beach. But if you're here in the wintertime, you'll begin to see major changes in that beach. That's because the whole beach profile is changing to a stormy environment from a very benign environment during the summertime. There you'd see that the Cape is not a permanent feature, that it is eroding away.
You know, there's an example that I'm familiar with that tells this story pretty well. Nauset Lighthouse at Nauset Light Beach in Eastham had to be moved back from its original perch in the 1960s because of the advancing waters. How common is that kind of thing? Are we seeing other examples?
Yes, we have. We've seen it. We've seen it on the Cape before because they had to move Highland Light back because Highland Light sits at the top of a cliff, but the erosion there is extreme, and they moved it back a long ways.
So what does this mean for property owners who still have property on the National Seashore? Is it inevitable that their houses are going to be washed away one day?
Well, I have a story that I tell. One time I had a call from somebody who lived at the top of Sangatee Cliff on Nantucket. He was very much concerned about the cliff face retreating, and he asked me what he should do. I said, sell it. And I wasn't being facetious. If you want to solve the problem, sell it to somebody else. It's really the only defense for the individual.
Yeah. So there's no way to stop this. Should we stop it? Should we be thinking about ways, I don't know, to arm the coastline? Can that even be thought about practically?
No, it can't. Number one, the cost of doing it would be atrocious. Secondly, the beach would be all gone because beaches don't survive on the seaward side of seawalls. Miami Beach is a perfect example of that. They build a seawall to protect Miami Beach. And then what happened was, under wave attack, the beach was destroyed because the waves would hit the seawall and then carry the sand away beneath it. That doesn't work, and it wouldn't work around the Cape either, and you wouldn't want to come to a Cape that was surrounded by a seawall. The other problem is that where you protect something, you may be causing someplace else to erode at a faster rate. The whole system of beach and barrier islands and barrier spits and so forth is a system that has to change. That's the process.
Bob Oldale, I'd love to ask you just sort of how you think about this personally, because I know you live on the Cape, you live in Falmouth. Do you think of your house one day sort of being washed away? I mean, it may not happen in your lifetime, but is there any part of that kind of thinking that sort of makes you sad?
No, not sad. And in fact, I live where Hurricane Bob came 3/4 of the way across my front lawn.
Wow.
I knew what I was getting when I bought the house 40 years ago. The reward that the people get by living on the coastline is the joy of looking out to sea and seeing the beautiful scenery and enjoying the beach. But it's a temporary thing, and you better recognize that, and you better adjust your thinking that if you're lucky, you'll have it for your entire life, and then somebody else has got the problem.
Right.
It will not be there forever.
And this leads to such an interesting sort of conversation about public policy, because up and down the East Coast, most recently perhaps with Superstorm Sandy, we see how vulnerable homes are that are built close to the ocean. And there's been some debate about how much society should pay to protect and rebuild these homes. What's your view on this?
Houses shouldn't be built on a barrier island or a barrier spit. They just simply don't have any logical reason for being there, because it's such a dynamic environment, and it's got to change by erosion and redeposition of the material. If you keep building on barrier spits to an absolute minimum or prevent it entirely, you've solved the problem of coastal erosion. If you look at Plum Island, it's highly populated on the north end, and it's a refuge on the south end. South end doesn't have any problem with erosion, but the north end has a huge problem with erosion.
Once there are people who have chosen to build and live on these areas that we now define as, you know, a problem with erosion, are the rest of us responsible for, you know, ensuring the longevity of where they're living?
It's not just a matter of trying to subsidize somebody's flood insurance. What we really have to address is, what do we do with New York City? What do you do with Boston or any of the other places, large cities along the coast? They're there because the coastline is there. Do we build a wall? I don't know. I haven't got an answer for that.
You've got a lot of knowledge, and you've left us with a great question that we'll ponder. Bob Oldale, he's a geologist emeritus for the U.S. Geological Survey. He lives in Falmouth. Bob, thank you so much for talking to us. We're very grateful.
You're more than welcome.
One more note on this story. Just last week, Selectmen in Aquinnah on Martha's Vineyard approved a new location for the Gayhead Lighthouse, which is one of the most important navigational tools on the East Coast. It will be moved 150 feet inland, and experts say that will keep it safe from erosion for the next century and a half.
And stay with us. Coming up, we'll explore the implications of gene drive technology, how humans could stack the deck against natural selection. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.